Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. When children love learning, they can tackle any challenge life throws at them. Sylvan's Insight Assessment can help you determine if your child is ready for what's ahead. It can also identify gaps in learning and point out areas that could be of concern for your child so they can tackle what's to come. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to episode 184 of the Talking Chop podcast. I am your host, Brad Roland. It is Sunday evening, September the 15th, about 2 weeks. Yes, 2 weeks until the end of the regular season. And joining me to, commemorate this occasion and look ahead to the future and look back to the past and all that fun stuff that we normally do on the podcast, Eric Cole is here. What's up, man?
What's going on, buddy? I'm glad to be back on, and you know, we could talk about some really kind of fun sort of looking to the future stuff without feeling like it's too much of a jinx.
Yeah, I mean, we're almost there. You know, I've gotten some pretty funny, lighthearted response to me on the last couple of podcasts, like kind of refusing to declare it over, and I still will not declare it over. Nope, I won't do it. I refuse, Eric. I'm an Atlanta sports fan. I will not do it until it is over. But to what you said, I will lean into it a little bit and say it does feel like the door is closing. I will not say it's over until it is over, and that's part of my bit at this point in time. But the Braves have now clinched a playoff spot, so that's over. That was a cool sort of under-the-radar thing that happened on Saturday. In fact, people were a little bit confused, including myself, at first as to how they clinched the playoff spot because the games didn't add up. And you had to kind of dig deeper to realize that the Cubs and the Cardinals play so often down the stretch that those teams both can't finish ahead of the Braves. So with that said, that was a foregone conclusion for a while now. That's not what's not really a landmark occasion necessarily because of the fact that it's been such a foregone conclusion for so long. But still, this team is in the playoffs for sure and very likely to win the division. And at the top of this podcast, it's going to have some somber moments when it comes to Charlie Culberson, etc. I wanted to take a moment and celebrate that a little bit because this is now a playoff team for sure.
Yeah, and it's been a team that's been really fun to watch, and they've kind of I know, like, over the last week, they've had a few more losses than we're accustomed to, but it's more like they're kind of back to, you know, like, they're winning more than they're losing, and they're just, you know, having to lose a few more games, whereas for a while there, like, you know, they were winning, like, 9 out of 10 games, they had, you know, 2 out of 10 games, you know, 2 out of 10 games were losses, and it was just, like, they had these long, lengthy stretches where it kind of feels almost a little bit worse than actually it is, when in reality, it's just kind of a, you know, just kind of a little bit of a regression to what you would expect, whereas, you know, playing against some good teams, you and I both talked about these series that they were beginning to be playing, and we were just kind of thinking, hey, if they can get out of all these games they were playing against the Phillies and Nationals with a split, then that'd be, you know, that's just perfect, you know, because that's just less opportunities for those organizations to kind of make up some ground, and instead the Braves made a bunch of ground on the Nationals specifically. So overall, I mean, really just a good week, and, you know, clinching the playoff spot's great. I will say that the division race is over. When you put up, you know, an extra
four
games. You
can say as much you want to, Eric. I refuse. I'm okay with you saying it, by the way. I endorse that behavior. You may not have the same amount of trauma in your past that I do with fandom, but it's okay to say it, I think. I just won't do it. But
I am much less hesitant to declare a game over because, you know, within a game, a lot of things can happen. But the sheer number of things that would have to happen over the course of 2 weeks of games for the Braves to not win the division.
Yeah, I mean, your magic number is 4 on September the 15th, and that means that even if the Braves, you know, somehow didn't win a single game the rest of the way, the Nationals would still have to play very, very impressive baseball in order to catch the Braves. So to that end, I understand the math is overwhelming. Basically, any system you look at now with 99.9% that the Braves are going to win the division, and I understand that. I'm kind of being funny. I'm knocking on wood, though, because I've seen some things in my life, but you're right on this, I think.
Yeah, and again, it's just, you know, there's definitely going to be little hiccups here and there, but I'm also we're starting to see in games decisions that are made that just kind of are owning the fact that, you know what, sometimes some of these games just aren't as important. You know, you're gonna give some bullpen guys some more rest. You're gonna get some starters out a little earlier because there's not, you know, you're gonna take some guys out of games so you can rest them, you know, line up regulars, things like that. I'd like to see maybe even a little bit more of that.
And yeah, I was gonna say, I think I'm at the point where I'm kind of tired of seeing, you know, five of the Braves players in the top 10 of games played across Major League Baseball. I think it's time for that to end, like now. Not that you have to rest all these guys all the time, but just, you know, playing, especially the old guys, your Freeman. Like, Freeman being in the lineup the day after he got hurt was kind of a laugher for me. Donaldson being a top 10 games played guy in the entire league is kind of ridiculous in my opinion, but alas, I mean, it's a little thing, but to your point, I think it's going to start happening. You know, this team is definitely not one that's going to just rest guys a ton down the stretch, but we'll all be pretty surprised if Freeman's playing every day the rest of the way. I would hope that doesn't happen, for instance. And, you know, Ronald and Ozzie are young, but even those guys could use a day off every once in a while. So there's no reason to have everybody play every game for the next 2 weeks. I know you're sort of in a race still for the best record in the National League, if you want to get into that. But, you know, for me, it's once everything's sewn up, and it's very close to being sewn up at this point, you want to keep guys fresh while also avoiding rust, which is a delicate balance. But, you know, still right now, the Braves are, what are they, 3.5 back of the Dodgers? That doesn't seem like a huge margin, but with only this many games to play, that's kind of a big gap too. So that's a reasonable goal. But at the same time, you want to be responsible and make sure guys are healthy and not raring to go, because, you know, not that the Culberson injury was anything but a fluke, but, you know, injury, it's just kind of a reminder sometimes that injury stuff can happen. But, you know, that's more of a fluke one, obviously. But, you know, the wear and tear stuff can happen too for guys that are playing every single day for 6 months, and you want to avoid that if you can.
Yeah, and I think that the way that it was handled last year might be very similar to what happens this year. Is like, you know, you'd let, because guys like Markakis and Freddie kind of really pride themselves on playing every day, but there were also times towards the end of the year last year after the division was locked up that they would like play an, like, you know, get their first at bat and then they'd get pulled. You know what I mean? So it's kind of one of those things.
I mean, that's kind of absurd to me still. Like, I think that's insane, which I understand. I mean, insane's too strong. I think that's kind of silly to allow guys to basically dictate what they're going to do. I understand it's probably going to happen, though, particularly with Freddie. Freddie just likes to play every single day, and he can kind of call his own shot, which is, I guess, okay. Markakis, actually, this year, because he missed so much time, you almost want him playing more to make sure he's good to go. Not that he has to play every day, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. But he's kind of the one, you know, normally the established vet that I would be arguing to not play as much. You know, the last 2 weeks of the season, it could be beneficial for him to play more, make sure he's in a groove. But obviously, with the way he came back, maybe doesn't necessarily need that. But, you know, Donaldson is kind of the one for me. It's like Donaldson has injuries in his past. He's probably played too much this season. And we kind of know why, because, you know, during that whole stretch when the Braves were scorching hot, it was the top four guys that were basically just carrying them for a month straight. And that's okay. But now, particularly with him, I would like to have some kid gloves with Donaldson. Freddie's pretty durable. I know he had the weird little hiccup this week, but he seems to be okay. Donaldson would be the one that I would be like, all right, let's get him off the field some in the next 2 weeks.
Well, it makes sense to do so anyway, because you're two utility guys, and I know we're about to talk about Culberson, and
yes,
obviously and Camargo fouling that ball off his leg. It's you're going to have to start trying out some guys to back up these guys regardless. And, you know, you have Austin Riley around now. And while the results have been a little bit mixed since he's come back, he's looked a little better recently. You know, like he had the pinch hit today, had the pinch hit double the other night. You know, he's been doing some things that have been looking better. It would be nice if he, like, got a look at third, give Donaldson a day off, gets a look at first, gives Freddie a day off, or at least gets some amount of innings there. You know, and obviously he can still play the outfield, because right now you have Adini Echevarria is your kind of guy who can probably play a few positions. And then it's not necessarily ideal to kind of move him around all over the infield. And being able to say, hey, you know, we have this guy who can play first, third in the outfield, you know, does it replace what Culberson and Camargo bring to the table? Probably not. And I say probably because, you know, we saw what Austin Riley did when he first came up. He's a guy that can definitely, he definitely has power, and he definitely has, can be a big positive at the plate. It just hasn't been for a while. And it would be nice if they could kind of give him some looks, give him some time, because if Camargo cannot go on for the division series, and obviously Culberson's out for the division series, you know, having a guy like Austin Riley who has some positional versatility, which is not a phrase I thought I would say regarding him, it's giving him some time to figure that out has benefits beyond just giving Donaldson and Freddie days off. But those are also benefits because, I mean, Freddie has a lingering bone spur issue, and while, you know, it's something he can play through, and he was hitting the ball. He's still hitting the ball hard, and, you know, he looked pretty good today. And, you know, you don't necessarily think that there's anything catastrophically wrong with him. I don't think anything where there's an inflammation issue is made worse by, you know, giving him a day here and there, or at least some, you know, most of a game off here and there, which you can do with if you can give some Austin Riley some playing time. And same thing for, you know, Donaldson, those issues with his calves, you know, it's that you just never know when it's going to crop back up again, if it's going to crop back up again. But what I do know is that when you have guys with tired legs and you need to kind of figure out what you can do for the postseason roster, it seems like those types of moves make more than enough sense to me.
Yep, I'm with you. Quickly, I mean, we both referenced Freddie. Are you worried at all about the bone spurs? I kind of glanced past it because I'm not necessarily, but, you know, it's a thing that you have to at least worry about. Freddie's had the wrist stuff, but aside from the wrist stuff, he's been exceptionally durable in his career and likes, as we just talked about, likes to play every single day. But do you worry at all about that bone spur issue? I mean, it forced him out of the game. I'm not sure, you know, how much of that was just him realizing that it's September and they probably don't need him to keep playing through pain if there is any. He seemed to be fine today, but that's one thing where, you know, it's very obvious to say this, but Freddie Freeman is extremely important. So do we worry even a little bit about Freddie's bone spurs, or is it just a passing thing that you have to consider but not really worry about?
I was more worried when it was kind of just dropped kind of out of nowhere that he has this bone spur issue, and I'm like,
by the way, Freddie Freeman
has a bone spur in his elbow, and that's not something that you generally hear about and go, oh, well, it's, you know, that'll just be gone tomorrow. You know what I mean? It's not a contusion. It's not a strain or something like that. That's, you know, a piece of the bone that's, you know, very sharp, and, you know, is that going to be a lingering thing? But the explanation after the game, I think, was really good. And I am someone who does have bone spurs. I have them in my neck and my shoulders. So it's kind of one of those things that I understand that, you know, you'll have good days and bad days. Mine generally are more symptomatic, I guess, just because of where they are and what they rub against. But when Freddie was like, look, I've had this for a couple years. Every once in a while, it'll just get stretched out. You know, I'll swing wrong, or, you know, I'll just, you know, in this case, he just jammed his arm on the ground, bracing himself on a grounder. And, you know, it'll bark a little bit. In this particular case, it was just a little bit much. So he just wanted to make sure everything was okay. And that's the responsible thing to do, which I'm glad that he did, as opposed to just kind of, you know, hoping that his arm, you know.
Yeah, it's actually, you know, kind of off brand for him. Like, Freddie is the guy who usually just doesn't say anything and wants to stay on the field. So I was actually, to what you were saying, like, I was pleasantly surprised that he just said, all right, I'm good.
It makes you worry a little bit just how much that hurt.
Yeah.
But, you know, he was back in the lineup, and bone spurs, everyone's correct. A lot of times they can be just, they're just a thing that you have. And every once in a while they get inflamed, but most of the time it's just kind of, you know, something that you have to deal with. And, you know, most of the time they don't even try bothering correcting them, just because, you know, in the case of an athlete, one of the reasons that they grow is like, it kind of helps to, you know, make the joints, you know, be supported the way that they need to be for their bodies to work a certain way. And so I don't think it's something that we're not going to see, unless something awful happens. You know, we're not going to see like Freddie have like an elbow procedure to remove bone spurs or anything like that. I wouldn't imagine.
No.
Yeah. And, you know, I think he'll be fine, you know, but it's something to kind of monitor and keep an eye on, because it has acted up recently, and where the Braves are about to be in a playoff push right now. So, you know, is it worth monitoring? Yes, but it seems more likely with Culberson out and Freddie having, you know, some sort of issue, regardless of what the severity is, it seems like it makes a ton of sense to, you know, start giving Austin Riley some time there. So just in case something happens, he can play over there.
Yeah. And let's talk about Culberson now. Obviously this is a big bummer. You know, famously, I've not been the biggest proponent of Culberson's bat, going back to before the last couple of seasons, and he's been way better than I thought he was going to be in Atlanta. But, you know, throwing that stuff out the window, it just sucks to see a guy get injured like that. Fortunately, it seems as if Culberson avoided, you know, the catastrophic damage that you fear when you're kind of hit in the way that he was in the face. Multiple facial fractures is what Snicker was telling the folks today. On Sunday, and then that was before the game started, and then after the game, he sort of announced that Culberson's going to be out for the year, which is not unexpected given the way that looked, but still, that's less important. You know, real-life standpoint, you just are happy that Charlie avoided some serious damage. Looks like all signs are positive for 2020 and beyond. It even talked about him being ready for spring training, which is a very baseball thing to think about right now. But Culberson, you know, it's unfortunate, and honestly, as much as he had been struggling for a little while here, at the plate, he does have some utility as someone who could just play everywhere, and the Braves were clearly going to have him on the roster. So there's the baseball part of it too, but just more than anything, I'm glad he's okay. It was kind of just brutal, and right after the fact, it was there were some worry moments for Culberson. I was not watching live, saw the video shortly thereafter, and was kind of like mouth agape, worried about how that was going to go. And hopefully, and it seems like, again, seems like pretty positive news, but he's not going to play again this year.
Yeah, it's up there with the Jason Hayward when he got hit in the jaw. For me, just watching a Braves player get hit. I mean, in Jason's case, he got hit, and like both the catcher and the umpire had to catch him. Because he was just out on his feet and he was about to keel over. But in Charlie's case, he's bleeding, and it's not one of those things too where there was any intent or anything like that. It wasn't even anger when I saw it. It was just clearly a pitch that got away from Rodney, and the aftermath definitely made me a little bit upset, but more just the watching what happened and understanding that a ball being thrown 90 plus miles an hour hitting you in the face is a scary, scary thing to have happen. Because if that ball's an inch, in a different direction, all of a sudden the guy's life can change entirely. It can end a career, and it was awful to watch having him carted off. And it's a credit to Charlie that, to go to an opposing pitcher who just hit you in the face and to kind of, gesture to him to, hey, we're good. It's okay. It was just an awful thing to watch. And then we got to see Snicker, again, say what you want to about the guy in terms of, decisions that are made in games, but he was understandably livid at that they called that a strike as opposed to just being a hit by pitch. And it fired up the team afterwards. He's out there. I thought him and Welke were going to come to blows for a second there. I thought he was going to get around the home plate umpire and go after him. And again, it was just awful just to have to see this guy have to go to battle again after watching one of his players who adore him. All these players adore him, and he adores them. Watching this guy get dropped to the ground by a pitch, and then as it turns out, the reason why that happened is because the Nationals manager asked for an appeal on that play to see if he actually offered or not. And one, he didn't offer. It just didn't happen. The ball, he did not put the bat down. He was just in the stance of bunt, and then all of a sudden he was having to get out of the way. And then that happened, and, Snicker was understandably upset. It was kind of a mess. And it's, even though the Braves won that game and it was really nice to kind of see them rally around and do what they did, it was truly kind of a really sober night for me. In a day where they clinched the division, all we really cared about was whether or not Charlie was okay.
Yeah, the timing of it, everything is unfortunate about it. To your point about Snicker, it's one of those things that we say every once in a while, we're known for being skeptical/critical of Brian Snicker as a baseball manager tactically, but it's one of those reminders where everybody loves Snicker, and we talk about that all the time. I am not the guy who dismisses the off-field stuff with Snicker entirely. I think sometimes it gets overrated, but at the same time, he's a fantastic guy that everybody seems to love. This is one of the reasons why is you see him come out of the dugout, get his money's worth, and kind of lose his mind because he likes these guys. He loves these guys. And even after the game, Snicker was emotional visibly with the media. And, that's not – it's a very human thing, but not everybody would be that way. And I think Snicker, just cares about these –
I agree with that.
Yeah, he cares about these guys. That's one of those things where – He should be credited and is credited with the fact that he's a player's manager and everybody loves him and everybody wants to run through a wall for Brian Snicker. That's a little thing through the prism of Culberson and the injury and all that, but I agree. Like him getting the guys back is something you can certainly get behind. And Snicker, as we always say, is someone who is beloved for a reason, and that is part of that package. Just the fact that he cares about his guys in that way. Quickly, you referenced Davey Martinez. People were very upset with Davey Martinez. He walked it back a little bit today. I guess he talked to Snicker reportedly and basically was trying to walk back a little bit. Because I wasn't watching in the moment, I didn't have the same visceral reaction that a lot of people did. But a lot of people, I would say most of people that I follow that are Braves people, were pretty incensed with Davey Martinez after this. And I gathered the information, but I just know full well as someone who's not watching, you can't really have that same reaction. So it seems like you were pretty upset with Davey Martinez in the moment.
Yeah, it wasn't like something where like Davey Martinez jogged out while Culberson was laying in a pool of blood or something, and like, hey, that was, I think he offered that and I want an appeal to first or anything like that. But first of all, that was his train of thought, like immediately afterwards, when first of all, it was a hit by pitch, right? Like no one would have called down and say, hey, you need to check that. And instead, it felt very inhuman to me. And, you know, I'm not one of those unwritten rules guys, but if, like, one of you guys just hits a guy in the face, you probably might not want to say, hey, you might want to check and see if they hit the bat first. You might want to see if that was a strike or not. You might want to see if he offered that or not. You know what I mean? Like, there are replays that I'm sure could have been called, like, for example, if it's like a foul tip into the face or something like that, and like I'm sure the umpires would have been made aware of that, you know, some other way. But for the Nationals to like go, oh, by the way, a few minutes after this happened, can you please go to the first base umpire and see if he remembers whether or not Charlie offered that pitch? Because I don't think there's any way he could have. I just don't think it is not possible for me to have that happen. And look, Bill Wilkie had a series. I mean, like, he was the home plate umpire today, and
yeah,
you know,
there was some umpiring going on in this series.
I bring on the robot overlords. I'm done. I don't even. I am over umpires not being good at their job, and this isn't just that we can see the strike zone on the TV. I could not have that little square on the TV, and I'd be like, what are we even doing? What are we even doing with how these umpires are? You know, it's like they're like, okay, well, on the calls that we. It feels a lot like that they're trying to put their specific imprint on a game, and they know they can't do that on a lot of calls because that so many of them are reviewable. The one thing we can't review right now are balls and strikes and like a few other calls, like, you know, for example, appeals to first, and it feels awful. It feels like that it feels like umpires are trying to put their stamp on the game and trying to like have their own little brand that they're working on and not actually just do the job of calls, balls and strikes and actually uphold what is happening in a game. And it's frustrating.
Yeah, I'm with you. That's well said. I'll pretty much leave it there. I just thought it was at least worth bringing up. I guess to his minor credit, David Martinez said, and I'm quoting here, the last thing I wanted to do was be a jackass, end quote, which was kind of funny. Got a laugh out of me, at least. And by the way, he got hospitalized today in the middle of the game, which I missed in real time. That was weird. And hopefully he's okay. But yeah, people were not very happy with him. A lot of that's just rivalry stuff, but wasn't the best look for David Martinez and the Nationals on the heels of that. And I think he referenced the fact that it was like a tie game, whatever it was. It's like, you know what, the guy hit in the face, let's all relax. Anyway, I'm with you on this one, even though I didn't have the same visceral reaction. Okay, let's take a break real quick, Eric, and then we'll come back, talk about Markakis and Camargo and roster stuff and all that fun stuff. So hold on tight, we'll be right back.
Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. As a parent, you want your child to have every opportunity, but giving them the tools they need to tackle every challenge, that takes a team. Now more than ever, educational support tailored exactly to what your child needs can make all the difference. That's why parents have trusted Sylvan Learning for 45 years as the ultimate teammate in their child's educational journey, instilling in them a love for learning and a passion for reaching the next level. And Sylvan's Insight Assessment can identify gaps in learning and areas that could be of concern for your child. It's a 360-degree view into your child's learning that you can't find anywhere else, and helps ensure that your child didn't miss something in school that might put them at a disadvantage in the future. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's SYLVAN29.com.
With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, motion sounds something like this. Kizik helps you experience the magic of motion. With over 200 patents and easy on, easy off technology, you'll never have to touch your shoes again. There are hundreds of styles and colors, plus a squish like nothing you've ever felt. For a limited time, get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
All right, Eric, we're back. We talked about Culberson. You know, it sort of feeds into, and Riley earlier as well, it sort of feeds into the fact that the roster is going to be interesting. And now we're probably going to spend, you know, half the show on the last day of the regular season about the playoff roster. So I don't want to go, like, you know, player for player on this thing. But, you know, Markakis being back is a good thing. I said that a number of times. People were pointing, you know, of course, because he had a good couple of days, people were decided to come at me on Twitter, which was funny because the one thing that I always say repeatedly about Markakis is that he hits right-handed pitching, which is what he did this weekend. So that's good. He definitely helps the team. All that to say, I don't want to go too deep into Markakis, but he's back. He's a helpful piece. Camargo, though, is now gone. So you're minus Culberson for the season for sure. Camargo is on the IL with a shin fracture. Apparently, it's a pretty good fracture, like hairline version, almost like a bruise. And there's a chance he's ready in like 3 weeks from when it happened. At the same time, I think it's fairly unlikely that he's at least on the NLDS roster. And given the way that he struggled this season at the plate, honestly, this is just me. I'm going to assume he's not coming back. Not that he couldn't come back if there was another reason, but with the current roster the Braves have, because they do have Echevarria, who is a major league player, you know, if they have one more injury, then you're definitely on Camargo watch, because they're going to probably need him, because they don't really have anybody behind Echevarria. But as long as Dansby, Ozzy, and Echevarria are upright, I'm going to kind of guess that Camargo does not come back. I could be wrong about that. That's a guess, but the NLDS seems to be pretty unlikely at this point in time. So, you know, Markakis seems like he's just fine. He's back and played well over the weekend, so that's a helpful thing. But how do you look at this roster right now on the depth side? Because I think, you know, as we talked about a little bit earlier, I think Echevarria and Riley are almost locks. I think Echevarria is an absolute lock, and Riley, because he can play corner infield and Duvall can't, is an important little distinction. I do think that if they wanted to play Echevarria at third base and they wanted to go with like Markakis at first, he's played there before. If they just really didn't want to carry Riley, they probably could get away with it. But I think he's going to be there based on just the way based on what you were saying earlier about the fact that he can play, you know, four positions.
Yeah, and I think it's that decision will come down to how Echevarria and Riley are playing, because if Riley is producing in the what. Over the next couple weeks, then it kind of goes, okay, maybe we don't need to, you know, really kind of force the issue bringing Camargo back. Because, you know, after a guy misses 3 weeks and, you know, has a microfracture in his shin, you don't really know what he's going to look like. And if you have a guy, if you have Echevarria and you have Riley, I mean, who are doing
something. He was just bad, too. That's the thing about Camargo. Like, I know he showed some life after he came back, but, you know, I think it's very noteworthy that this is not Camargo of 2018 that you're bringing back. Maybe that guy is back at some point in the future, but this season, the fact that he was bad has to matter. And when you have a guy who's bad and misses the last three weeks of the season plus the NLDS, I just can't imagine bringing that guy back unless there's some other injury or if somebody's just floundering. If Riley's 0 for 40, then okay. But Echevarria is just not going to play very much unless you have another injury. So, and his defense, you just kind of need it at this point in time. And by the way, how lucky are the Braves right now that they got Echevarria for absolutely nothing?
Yep, 100%.
Because they have nobody else. I mean, look at the. I mean, you know this better than anybody. Look at their other options. They have no other options. He's it. I kind of, because I hadn't heard anybody talk about Echevarria in the wake of Culberson, and you know, rightly the reaction to Culberson's injury was not roster related. It was like, oh God. What about Charlie? And I totally get that. I just hadn't seen anybody talk about this, so I kind of floated on Twitter a couple hours ago. I was like, so we are assuming Echevarria is on the roster, right? And everybody was like, well, yeah, he has to be. I'm like, yeah. I mean, I just wanted to make sure I wasn't missing something, but he's the only option. They don't have anybody on the 40-man. There's nobody that you can point to play backup, shortstop, second base. I mean, it's not even the situation where, like I've said before, if you got an injury to Dansby, you could play Ozzy at shortstop. You don't have a second baseman either. There's nobody on this roster that can play either one of the middle infield spots other than Echevarria behind the starters.
Yep, that's pretty much the gist of it for me. And again, that makes me to get to your point is that if Echevarria, I think has a much stronger case just to make the postseason roster, regardless of what's going on with Camargo.
He's a lock.
Yeah, because again, as like a late inning defensive replacement. And as his ability to play short and things like that, he has value beyond. Now, the one thing I will say about with Camargo is that now with both Camargo and Culberson on the roster, missing not having that switch hitter as a bench bat.
Oh, it'd be helpful to have Camargo. Yeah. Even as low as I've been on him this season and how bad he's been, he would be helpful with constructing this roster. There's no question about that.
So I think it's if Austin has a good last couple weeks of the season, then I think that it's easier to make the case that regardless of what's going on with Camargo, you just put Riley on the postseason roster, and then, you know, maybe Camargo comes back for the league championship series or something like that. But in terms of if Riley is not playing well, I could see a scenario where that, you know, maybe if Camargo, even if he's not feeling 100%, you still bring him back because at the very least, you know, having that utility guy and having a guy who, particularly against lefties, has some power and things like that. There's reasons to do it. I'm not as sold on that, you know, Camargo is not going to come back for the NLDS because I think that was
off the reporting more than like the NLDS thing is basically the reporting that was out there. All the beat guys were saying it was unlikely. Now, beyond that, if you win that series, that's another week or so. And if you factor that in with the recovery timeline that we've seen, that would bring Camargo back into the picture more. But I was really with the NLDS only. I'm going off of the reporting that says it's unlikely that he comes back. And, you know, beyond that, it's like it becomes hard to just say, OK, Johan, you've missed the last 3.5 weeks. Now you're going to be on the NLCS roster cold. That's more of a like that's just me reading between the lines. But the reporting that I saw repeatedly was the NLDS is unlikely. And I'll go off that for now unless we just see something else about it.
Yeah, if we get an update from like, you know, like Camargo's progressing, you know, more quickly than expected, which is basically how this happened with injuries with the Braves, right? Like all of a sudden Dansby is, you know, all of a sudden made a turn for the better, or, you know, Markakis is progressing faster. Then I feel like if that reporting starts to happen, then you can actually, you know, start thinking maybe he'll be back before the end of the season. And then you can kind of make some decisions about, you know, you can start making some assumptions about the NLDS roster. But I think a lot of there's going to be a few spots. Bullpen wise, as well as bench spots, that like it's going to be like the last week of the season before we really get a good sense as to what's going on.
Yeah, there should be. That's part of the fun of, and we will be talking about the end of the month is just the fact that you have to figure out what's going on with, especially with the bullpen. You know, they brought up Tukey, they brought up Wilson, they brought up Wright this week. None of those were surprising, but just all those arms. You know, AJ Minter is now gone for the duration on a 60-day DL. He was so bad that was going to always, not the IL thing, but just the fact that he had been so bad that he was not going to be around the playoffs. But a really ugly season for Minter, which we should at least mention, a 7.06 ERA. That is really rough, and it felt that bad. It wasn't as if it felt like it was this one big fluke for Minter. He just looked bad. Grant Dayton is back, to your point. So there's all these interesting names that we can discuss in the future more, unless you'll have something to say about it today. But yeah, it's the bullpen and stuff is kind of the one spot where we don't kind of have a pretty good idea, you know, again, barring injury, because this week the Braves lost two guys that you would have projected, you know, Culberson projected to be on the roster. I think Camargo probably was going to be on the roster as well. And losing both those guys in the same week, though not your top tier guys, which is a good thing. Losing two guys in the span of, you know, what, 3 days, 4 days was not great.
Yeah, I mean, it would be nice if the Braves could like get guys healthy and then not immediately lose a couple more guys, which it seems like it was what happened the last couple months. You know what I mean? Like when you lose Dansby, Markakis, and Ender, and you're just like, whoa, what just happened? All of a sudden, you have three lineup regulars that are on
there. And the Ender thing is still out there. I mean, Ender, you get some trickling reports, but it's really tough to kind of pin down his timeline. And Enciarte is on a different level than someone like Camargo, where Enciarte, if he is healthy, he's going to be on the roster. But we just don't know if he's going to be available or not, because there's just not that much reporting on it right now. And that's nobody's fault. It's just he's got a weird injury and a tricky timeline projection, and he was always going to be behind Markakis. But, you know, ideally you'd like to see Ender Enciarte play baseball before the NLDS if he's going to be on the roster. And that's another wrinkle in here that we haven't even really talked about on this podcast, because I don't really have anything to say about it. It's like, wait and see. We honestly just don't know.
Yeah, I mean, and made trickier by the fact that there is nowhere for him to rehab. You know, they don't do rehab stints in the Arizona Fall League, which starts this week, by the way. More importantly, it's, you know, it wasn't just like the bone is healed in Markakis' case. Once the bone's healed, you know, if everything's working right, then he can go out there. You know, when you have like issues with your hamstrings and things like that, it's, you know, you have setbacks.
Soft tissue stuff is always tricky, man. It is.
Yep. If you hear the word strained oblique or anything like that, that can range from a week to 3 months. That's just what happens. And it's not, and there's no, you know, they'll just test it and they'll just keep testing it. When he has a few good days in a row, they might be able to say, okay, maybe he's come around us. But it's not one of those things that, you know, all that, you know, hamstrings, obliques, stuff like that, you just don't really know. And unfortunately for the Braves, because again, you know, when Ender Enciarte is healthy, I'm not sure if he's a good hitter, but I know he's a good fielder, and I know he does bring value. So
he hits righties at least. I think he's at least like a league average or better hitter against righties. So that's something you can bank on, I think. But yeah, I'm with you. He's definitely hot and cold with a bat, but at the very least, he is, you know, he's Billy Hamilton is Billy Hamilton. He's interesting as sort of in himself. But Ender, you know, you're comfortable with Ender playing defense. Hamilton, you could say the same thing, but Hamilton's even Hamilton's like a five times worse hitter than Enciarte. So you don't want to have to play Billy Hamilton more than just as a pure ninth inning defense guy and pinch runner. That should be his only role in life. Whereas Ender, you could start Ender in center field against a right-handed pitcher, and it wouldn't be weird. Against a lefty, I would not do that, considering you have Ronald Acuña on the roster. But against a righty, you know, you could certainly sell me on that. The problem is you have three guys in your outfield that are far better against right-handed pitching, and none of them are Ronald Acuña. And Acuña's going to play, obviously. So you have to pick two of the three between Joyce Markakis and Enciarte, but that's another podcast for another day.
Yeah, I agree. That's
pretty much anyway, okay, so that's probably good on just like the roster roundup. Oh, one thing that we have to talk about briefly is that we don't really know how this is going to go yet because the Braves faced all righties over the weekend. And honestly, they don't face another left-handed pitcher, at least projected, until Saturday. So until we see them face a lefty, we kind of don't know. But when Markakis came back, the reporting was that he's going to play left field against right-handed pitching with Joyce in right field. And I'm quoting here from one of the reports. Snicker is going to leave it up to him, quote, to Markakis on whether he stays in left field or not. So I'm taking that to mean that Markakis is going to play every day, even against lefties. My thoughts on this are well documented, but did you take the same thing I did? This was not explicitly said anywhere that I could find. It was like no one explicitly said Markakis is going to play every day. But leaving it up to him on whether he stays there against left-handed pitching would, for me, tell you that Markakis is going to play every day. And, you know, I stated my opinion on that. What have you seen or read, or what are you interpreting? Like, how are you seeing it in that situation? Because that's pretty interesting to me.
Okay, so I have thoughts. First, I know this sounds bizarre, but I honestly think that the only... Markakis had a bad month in the middle of the summer where it looked like he was like at the end of the first half it felt like he was kind of getting gassed and he wasn't looking as good, and you know you worry about that with his case, because all these people, including beat reporters who commented on whether Markakis was coming back, said you know like everyone likes him, but his second half he completely cratered last year, and it was look, he's an older guy. And he already has a limited margin for error in terms of being from a decent bat, which is what I think is a fair baseline, is that he's a decent bat to a bad one. Because if he's gassed and then all of a sudden he's not hitting the ball as hard, and then, you know, all of a sudden it's a lot of grounding in the double plays and all this other stuff, you know, those people have like seemingly forgotten that happened. And the one thing that I took away as a positive from Markakis being hurt, with the caveat that you never with a arm, wrist, or hand injury for a batter, is there is not a consistent at best track record of those guys coming back immediately and there not being like some sort of drop off, because again, you like when you break hand bones, things like that, you know, people talk about you lose power and that you just don't, it takes a while to get your strength back, get your mobility back. You know, taking all that into account, I honestly feel like that was the only way that Markakis was going to get enough rest to be a guy that could, you know, consistently hit the ball hard like he did. He did early in the season. He was hitting the ball hard.
No, I mean, even when he wasn't hitting left, even when he cratered, he wasn't bad against righties. It didn't go super well, but that's the thing that people are sort of overlooking in this. I know we're not. We talked about it a number of times. But Markakis, I agree with you. It could be a sneaky benefit that he missed so much time because he's going to be fresher than he would have been as a guy who's a little bit older in his mid-30s and all that fun stuff. But it's just, for me, this is not a one-year thing, and that's not a nuanced take by me or you. It's very simple to see what he doesn't do well on a baseball field. I know there's a lot of disagreement with his defense, and I'm going to leave that alone for now. We said plenty on his defense in the past, but one thing that it's not really up for debate is that he's not a good hitter against left-handed pitching. There's not a number you can find that would tell you that he hits lefties well. Like, can he hit lefties? Is he a disaster? No, he's not. He's not terrible. He's not unusable ever. He's not Billy Hamilton. Like, he's not that. But he's not a league average hitter against left-handed pitching. He's well below that for his entire career. This is not my opinion. That is fact. It's it's statistical. It's not. So that's kind of where I'm coming from with this whole thing. In addition to the rest, because I agree with you, we got some attention, I guess, is the way to put it, for saying, I think last week or maybe the week before, that he was going to be, if he wasn't 100%, he wasn't going to bring you much. You know, I'm not going to declare him 100% healthy based on this weekend, but he looked good this weekend, so I'm not going to say that he's not 100% either. But the one thing is that he was hitting righties, and that's what we kind of know he can do. He's a good hitter. He's a good hitter against right-handed pitching. He's kind of always been, even when he was not great early in his Braves tenure, even all the negative attention that's been on him. The one thing that he has been able to do, both in Atlanta and Baltimore before that, is hit righties. He can hit righties. There's no argument about that. He absolutely should start against right-handed pitching. He's a good player against righties. But that does not mean he has to play every day, because there are better options. Like, I know people hate Adam Duvall. If you have one at bat against a left-handed pitcher between Adam Duvall and Nick Markakis, unless you just need a contact of any sort, if it's just one at bat in a vacuum, Duvall is the better hitter. Look at the numbers. I know people hate numbers, but Markakis doesn't hit left-handed pitching well. This is not like, I don't know. It makes me so crazy, because he does hit righties well. He does. And he has the off-field stuff and all that. I made a couple of joke tweets about the off-field stuff this week as well. And we know what he did. We know. Trust me, I heard from people both on Twitter and off Twitter, even people that we know in the media. Trust me, guys. I understand his impact in the clubhouse. No one has to remind me. I totally get it. The fawning is overboard, but I get it. The one thing that he doesn't do well that we can agree on, I think, slash hope. I know we can't agree on this because people won't allow it. Is that he doesn't hit left-handed pitching? He just doesn't do it. I'm sorry. And by the way, first at bat against Madison Bumgarner on Saturday is going to be a home run. I know this. I'm calling it now. But that will not erase the decade plus of information that we already have.
End so, I think that the level of just. Again, I'm with you on this, is that I like what I saw out of him. I think he's healthy.
He looked good this weekend.
They weren't seeing eye singles he was hitting this weekend. He was hitting the ball hard. He was among the harder contact that we saw out of the Braves this past weekend, right? So it feels like that, you know, like he's making hard contact. He's well rested. That is great. Play him against every righty the rest of the way, and you know, and don't pull him against lefty relievers. You know, no one is saying that. No. The only argument that was being made on social media earlier this week was that, hey, maybe there's good reasons to not start him against left-handed pitching. One, because it gives him a little bit of time off, which doesn't seem like the worst thing in the world for one of your older minor lineup regulars. Two, doing so does not remove him from the clubhouse, whose presence it seems to be sacrosanct. You know, it's not like if he doesn't start against left-handed pitching that he's put into a cannon and fired into the sun.
Exactly.
What is said is that, hey, there might be reasons to not do it. And I don't know if there are some people with significant followings that I'm not going to mention that, like, are a member of Nick Markakis' PR department. And I'm sure that Markakis wants to be in there every day, but there are real baseball reasons for a team that is either going to be playing for home field advantage, and if we're going to care about the one seed and you're going to care about each game, then you might want to consider the fact that you might have better matchups that you want to play. If you're not going to do that and you're going to give lifetime achievement awards for a guy to go against left-handed pitching when you have better options on your playoff-bound roster, then yes, I have some problems with that. Now, is it going to be the end-all be-all as to whether or not the Braves make the playoffs or end up as the one seed? Probably not. It's just not going to happen because there's just not enough left-handed pitchers the rest of the way. We're talking about a small sample size of games, but there are reasons not to do it. And to completely dismiss them the way some people were was dishonest at best.
Yeah, it's really silly. And just for some context here, I'm going to use one stat to tell the story, and then I'll go deeper because people seem to hate WRC plus because it's a, you know, quote, advanced stat, but it's just the easiest way to compare him to the rest of humanity. Since he arrived with the Braves, 2015 season against left-handed pitching, 75 WRC plus. That is bad. 2016, 66 WRC plus. 2017, 89 WRC plus, which is not a disaster. It's just fine. Last year was the one outlier in his whole career, 104, and obviously he had the great early season run last year. League average, by the way, not anything great, but still, if it was 104 for his career, this is not the conversation that we're having, by the way. If that's a real number and that was sustainable, we're having a different conversation right now. But this year, it's 59. For his career against left-handed pitching, I'm gonna pull this up right now. Sorry, I'm doing math on the podcast, which I know people always love. But it's a situation where it's bad. Sorry, I'm looking at these numbers and they're not cooperating. I was going to give more context. Just so people know that WRC Plus, he's never had an OBP. And this is his best stat. His best OBP against left-handed pitching was 343. That's his best stat by far in that range. This year it's 289. He slugs somewhere in the low to mid 300s as a general rule. So I guess left-handed pitching. So all that to say, this is not an opinion thing. Okay, I finally have it up here right now. Even in Baltimore, where I saw some people lauding how, you know, kind of complaining about how he wasn't beloved in Atlanta the way he is in Baltimore. And I wanted to say, because he was a lot better in Baltimore than he is in Atlanta. He was an actual star in Baltimore.
Yeah.
It's, I don't know. I hate doing like the whole thing again, but it really bothered me just to see some of, and I think you put it the best way there. It's just, you're either ignoring the information or you're being disingenuous. It's one of the two. And you know, maybe it's both for some people, and that's totally fine. But I agree. The best way to put this is, you know, you can act like there's not a baseball reason at all to take him off the field. And that's just not true. I'm sorry. It's just not. So we can leave it there for now. I'm interested to see. And by the way, if he plays against lefties in September, I don't really care about that. You might want to see him play. So like, if he's in the lineup against Bumgarner on Saturday, I won't be bothered by that. I really won't.
You want to know why, Brad?
Why?
Because the division's locked up.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, if you want to,
Everyone heard him.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, sort of. but you know, with the current roster as constructed, you'd have a hard time selling me on Marquez as the third outfielder against a left-handed pitcher in the playoffs. I guess if you want to paint the picture of there's no other good options, I might listen to that, but that's another opinion for another day, and we'll talk about that. Because I guess if you took out Camargo and Culberson, maybe that was some of the ammo that you want to put out there. But acting as if he can't help the team unless he's playing every single day and hitting fifth is a good way to make me insane. There you go. That felt good, Eric. There you go. We're done on that for now.
Yep. It's out there now.
We'll come back and do more about that later, I'm sure, because people are going to be yelling about this. I expect this to be on Twitter and all that stuff. Anything else that you wanted to note from this week? Oh, I have to ask you about one specific player that I made on my notes that's not on our notes. Max Fried, any concern? He was not good on Tuesday, and he was really not good today. It's two starts, but you know, Fried's been hot and cold at times. It would not be good if he was cold now, because they're going to need Max Fried at some point, whether in a starting role or in a long man relief role. But did those two starts bother you at all, or is it just a two start sample that you're not worried about?
I'm not super worried. You know, he's still getting movement on his pitches and things like that, and you know, we can't really ignore the fact that he played the Phillies, which have some righty bats that are just going to give me, with guys like Real Muto and Hoskins and, you know, guys like that. And then you have, you know, Bryce Harper, guys like just good righty bats. That's just going to be a tough matchup for him at times. And then while he didn't look particularly good against the Nationals today, he's just one series removed from making them look silly for, you know, an extended period of time. So that's a team that had a very recent look at him and, you know, probably had some more time to adjust to him than normal. So I'm not super worried about him, if I'm just being honest. It's something that you monitor just because the playoff rotation is not necessarily set in stone in terms of how that's going to be handled. I've maintained that I think that it should be matchup dependent as to, you know, whether there's a lot of lefty bats that should concern you more than righty and, you know, things like that as to kind of who plays when and all that. The Braves have some options there, and Fried should absolutely be one of them. And I expect him to be on the playoff roster, but whether or not he's the guy that, you know, if he fades down the stretch, you know, he's already has a bunch of innings. It's a career high for him this year. I expect him to contribute somehow to the playoff roster, but if he fades down the stretch, then maybe he needs to be a guy that, you know, is maybe out of the bullpen for their first round or something like that, depending on the matchup. Overall, though, I'm not super concerned about, especially long term. It's just kind of, he's a guy that's going to give up the long ball sometimes, and he's, you know, he gave up some, you know, over the last couple starts, and, you know, that's just kind of the way it goes, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think we agree on this. I'd be pretty surprised if he didn't make an impact of some sort in the playoffs, but we floated, I think Scott did, or Zach did, or you did, or somebody did, the piggyback thing where, you know, maybe you go into a start with Julio or Fulte and have Max Fried ready to go in the third inning if you need him, that kind of thing, and just kind of plan on doing that. or the other way around, or however you want to do that. I think the only two guys that we absolutely know are starting playoff games for sure are Soroka and Keuchel, barring injury.
The other three Canadian guys, son.
What?
My Canadian son, who looked really good.
He did. Really good. He did sort of bounce back in a strong way, which I was definitely encouraged by. And he keeps drawing these matchups. He had to face Soroka. Sorry, he had to face Scherzer twice in a week, and he's scheduled to face Nola on Thursday. Like he can't avoid the number ones.
He doesn't get the number five matchups too often, unfortunately.
No, and by the way, how about that 12:10 start on Thursday with Soroka and Nola? And no one's gonna be able to watch it because it's Thursday at 12:10. Yikes.
Well, baseball scheduling is a thing.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really care that much, in part because it's September and the lead is what it is. But that's brutal for a fan, even as, you know, I do media work, but I still have a job during the day, and I can probably monitor it, but I can't sit down and watch baseball at 12:10 on a Thursday. Some people can, but I'm not one of them. So I feel bad for everybody, but I will miss something in that game, I'm sure. Okay. Well, that's the one thing I wanted to definitely touch on in terms of stuff we haven't already touched from this week. Keuchel looks great still. Fulte had some nice moments at times. There was some good, you know, good hitting overall. Donaldson continues to just rake, which is encouraging. I don't know. That's kind of all I have, other than Markakis was good. Of course, we mentioned that. He had the four hit game on Friday. I'm sorry, on Saturday. The magic number is four. That's all
magic
I got.
Magic number is four. Acuna is closing in on 40-40.
Yeah, we're almost there. I mean, I'm kind of guilty of not caring about that as much as some people do. But it's when that few people in baseball history have done something, it becomes a lot cooler. So maybe I should be more dialed in on that. It's going to happen, I think. We've been talking about that for a while, and I think that's probably why I haven't talked about it as much recently, but it seems like it's going to happen, and it's pretty impressive, man. I mean, it's not like breaking ground to say that out loud, and Ronald, it's like, we could do 10 minutes of the podcast every single week about Ronald Acuna. He's that good and that young and that ridiculous, but yeah, it's pretty ridiculous.
Yeah, he's ridiculous. The steals are going to be the tricky thing, and just because, I mean, getting the...
They were always going to be the tricky thing, by the way. Steals are weird. Yeah, no one steals bases anymore.
Yeah, and getting that many over, you know, he has to get six more, and getting those when you have three games against JT Realmuto, you got two off of him in one game, but I don't think Realmuto is going to let that happen again. He's a tough guy to steal against, so you got some games against the Phillies, which makes that tricky. You have to kind of hope. Yeah, I'm sure he was kind of hoping to get on base some more and maybe have Kurt Suzuki behind the plate.
By the way, before we keep going, without looking, how many players in baseball have more steals than Ronald Acuna this year? I know the answer now. I looked it up, but
I'm pretty sure he leads the league, doesn't he?
He leads the National League.
Oh, okay.
He does not lead Major League Baseball. In fact, a former Brave leads Major League Baseball. If I give you that, do you know the answer?
Not offhand, but I'm gonna be mad, I think, once I don't know the answer.
Yes, you are. It's one of your original sons, Malik Smith.
Oh, Malik.
44 steals from Malik Smith out in Seattle, and then Adalberto Mondesi has 39,
Royals,
but the fact that Ronald Acuna, again, that goes to my point a second ago, that no one steals bases anymore, because they don't, but Ronald Acuna is going to literally have to lead the league in steals, like, by a decent margin in order to get to 40 steals. He has 36 right now. He needs four more. Trey Turner has 32. He's four behind, and Trey Turner is really fast. By the way, Trey Turner, I think, will probably be leading the league if he hadn't got hurt, because Trey Turner has a lot more per game than Acuna does, for instance. Trey Turner only has 463 plate appearances and 32 steals, so he has a higher pace than Ronnie. But the fact that Ronnie's going to have to lead the league in steals, by the way, he could easily lead the National League in steals and not get to 40.
Yeah, he could.
It's almost more impressive if you say 40 home runs and led the league in steals. You know what I mean? Like, that actually sounds more impressive than 40-40 does, because 40 is like, 40. Because, you know, back in my day, Eric, I know we're old, but 40 didn't used to be, like, ridiculous. That's a lot. It's always been a lot. But guys used to steal 80 bases. Like, that used to happen, like, fairly recently in history.
I mean, Ricky Henderson and Vince Coleman were a thing, man. Like,
that's what I mean. And, like, to lead the league comfortably at 36 in September is pretty wild, but it does go to show you that Ronald Acuna is a freak, because he's going to hit 40 home runs almost certainly, and the fact that he's going to do that and very likely lead the league in steals at 21, I mean, we talk about him all the time, but that's just kind of absurd.
Yeah, and you know, the thing that's a little bit more concerning for me with Acuña, I mean, I think he has to get one more home run. I think he's going to get to 40 home runs. I don't think he's going
to
go.
That seems likely with 2 weeks to go. Yes.
Yeah, the stolen bases are a little bit tricky, but you know, Ronnie's in a bit of a funk right now. You know, he's still drawing walks, and you know, he's still getting impact hits. You know, obviously in that inning where you know Charlie got hurt and he comes in and he hits the 2-run double, he's still hitting the ball hard too. But we've also seen 3 straight months where he's you know striking out nearly a third of the time. And he's, you know, it's just the numbers haven't looked really good in September either. So it'd be nice to kind of see him kind of get on track too, because right now he's on track for the worst WRC plus month of the entire season, which is not really what you want to have for arguably your best player going into the playoffs. But he's also a guy where, you know, he'll go through these funks sometimes, then he comes back with a vengeance. So I'm not super worried, but at the same time, it'd be nice if he was, you know, he could get something going.
Yeah, coming into today, the 20 games previously, he has a slash line in those 20 games of 175, 256, 350, which is about 600 OPS. That's real bad for Ronald Acuña. Again, it's a 20-game sample. It's 90 plate appearances. I'm not worried, but it is worth noting that he has not been great. He's not been himself at the plate for you know almost a month now. So, yeah, not ideal timing-wise. So maybe because he is so young, I think he's going to play more than some of the vets are going to play in the next 2 weeks. Maybe he'll have some time to iron that out, but maybe he's tired. That could also be a thing, because famously he and Ozzie are just playing all the time.
Yeah, they are playing all the time.
And Freddie.
Braves have a day off tomorrow.
Yes, off on Monday, which is nice.
Yeah, that's gonna be welcome. And their last day off like got co-opted by like them not getting in from a flight until like 3 a.m. or something. So I'm sure that's gonna be something that they're gonna be happy to have happen. Just kind of get a rest day. You know, it's been a tough road trip. I mean, it's just been a tough trip in general. Really tough stretch of games. So I think that I'm hopeful that this day off is gonna do wonders for a few guys who definitely need some rest.
Yeah, their last day off was that Wednesday day off, which was super bizarre after Labor Day. And I couldn't figure out why there wasn't baseball happening, because it was a Wednesday in September. But, yeah, it was the last time they were off, and that was, you know, almost, let's see, 2 weeks ago. So, yeah, it's time for a day off, and that'll be good for the Braves. Quickly looking ahead, schedule we talked about doesn't really matter a ton at this point, but the Braves do play their next 6 at home, Philly and San Fran. Philly is comical, which is fun for Braves fans because they don't like the Phillies. They have not been the greatest show in the world this season. But 3 games at home against them, followed by 3 against San Francisco. The Giants are not very good. So, you know, if you're taking bets, I would bet that it's wrapped up by Saturday. I mean, it could be over on Wednesday. I mean, that's if the Braves take care of business Tuesday and Wednesday and the Nationals cooperate, it could be over as early as Wednesday. So.
Yeah, I think next week we're going to see the Braves clinch. I do think that's going to happen.
That and, seems incredibly likely, honestly. I mean, if the Braves just win, you know, they have 6 games this week. Honestly, if you told me right now how many I would project the Braves to win, it's probably like 3.8. So if they would just win 4 out of 6, it's over on their own. And that's what the Nationals is doing, whatever they
winning
want.
Every single game.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think I would certainly bet on the Braves winning 3 of these 6. It's not a given by any means, but against 2 teams that you're better than and they're both at home, you would assume they get at least 3 of these. Yeah, I would say that we're pretty safe to assume it's over by Saturday or Sunday. It could be even earlier than that. So, and then if you need it, by the way, the Braves go to Kansas City for 2 after that, and the Royals are not very good.
Well, yeah, don't mention Kansas City, though. That was the last series the Braves lost.
I understand, but listen, they're not very good, so we can talk about that then. Now, a week, if we're talking a week from now, Eric, even though if it's me or you, if it's me and you or me and Scott, if we're discussing this a week from now and it's not over yet, I'm gonna be terrified. Just fair warning to everybody, it's not over yet a week from now. I'm gonna be the ranting, raving guy on the podcast that's just worried about the worst case scenario. So I'm okay right now.
It's too funny. I almost kind of want it to happen.
No, you don't. Don't say that out loud. What's wrong with you?
Just to see how you'd react, but
it wouldn't be good. In fact, I think next week's podcast is going to be hosted by Eric and Scott together. I'm going to bow out of next week's podcast if that happens. No, I'm kidding.
I did. Scott and I had fun doing that one time when you were.
It will probably happen again. It could happen in the playoffs. I mean, we've committed to do a show after every game. If I have some reason why I can't do one, it's going to be you and whoever. Yep. Probably Scott, because Scott's awake. That's the one thing about Scott in the playoffs is like we're going to be recording at like 1:30 in the morning. But Scott, 3 hours is helpful.
Being 10 p.m. is much different for sure.
It very much is. All right, Eric, any final thoughts? I know you briefly mentioned Arizona Fall League. I'm assuming we're going to be covering that on the old talkingchop.com.
We are. That's kind of Garrett's project each fall. I chip in and help here and there. But we're going to be doing weekly recaps, and the tentative plan is for those recaps to happen on the Fall League's off days, which generally are going to be Monday and Tuesday. It just kind of depends on the schedule lines up, but that's generally going to be the plan. Either today or either tomorrow or Tuesday, we're going to have a AFL preview go up. We've already kind of talked a little bit about what guys are going to be going to the Arizona Fall League. The short version, it's not the most exciting group of players that are going to the AFL this year, but there are some really interesting guys. Justin Dean, Trey Harris being the two that have our eye the most. But, you know, that's something we are going to be covering, but it's going to be more of a weekly thing. It's not going to be like the daily minor league recaps where I'm already getting DMs from folks saying that they're missing those. I'm not to the point where I missed them quite yet. It's kind of nice.
You will in November. That'll be when you miss those.
November is when I start going, okay, I really need some minor league baseball. But, you know, when you have to get up each day to, at the very least, make sure that the recap has been written. And, you know, and obviously writing them on my end and then making sure everything gets edited and, you know, make sure everything's covered and good to go. You know, it's kind of nice to have a little bit of a break from it. But, you know, it's also nice to have a little bit of minor league baseball to talk about. And Garrett loves doing the AFL stuff, so that's going to be fun. But beyond that, on the minor league side, that's going to be pretty much it. I still have some interviews that are probably going to be happening. That's going to be more off-season content once we kind of get into, you know, the dark winter months where we're just wanting things to talk about. And we're going to be having some interviews with some minor leaguers and, you know, doing things on Road to Atlanta. I have some guests I've kind of been talking to and poking about, you know, doing some kind of recappy roster type stuff. So that's kind of what we have going on. Road to Atlanta is going to be more of a, like an every other week thing as a result, just because, again, we don't really have actually anything to talk about, specifically newsworthy.
There was a pod this week, though, so if you missed it, go back and listen to it.
Yeah, make sure you listen to it. We've gotten the Google podcast thing short of that, I think.
As far as I know, people stopped yelling at me about it. That was not on us. Google Podcasts just decided to mess something up without any prompting from us, and we don't have the access or the ability to mess that up. No, honestly, I mean, for people that don't understand this, I just post the podcast to Megaphone, which hosts our podcast, and then it just goes to all of the services. So yeah, we have no control over like how services handle our podcast. They just had the RSS feed and they go from there. But so they did something, and I think it's fixed now because Chris fixed it. So shout to Chris.
Yeah, Chris is the man.
Yes, he is. All right, Eric. Well, again, you guys heard it, but Road to Atlanta is still happening. So please subscribe to that. It'll be on this same feed. Check out our minor league coverage and our major league coverage over at talkingchop.com. I occasionally write things, very occasionally. You'll see more of Eric than me, and you just get to hear my voice, and hopefully you guys don't hate me too much by now. But I know you're all listening for Scott and Eric more than I am, which is fine. I'm just here to direct traffic. Thank you, Eric, as always.
Thank you, man. I appreciate you having me on again.
No problem, my friend.
I feel like I'm slowly catching. I mean, I think I'm slowly catching up with Scott in appearances. So
I think you're almost there. I have to go back and count that at some point in time. You definitely lead the podcast in Ozzy Albies trade references, so I appreciate that.
And you gave me one right there without me having to do it. So I'm pretty
excited. Somebody, I can't remember who it was, so my apologies. Somebody tweeted at us today and actually said something about Scott wanting Ozzy to be traded, which made me laugh hysterically because I think they were talking about me, but I wasn't 100% sure. And I'm happy to let Scott take the bullet for that, though. I appreciated it greatly. I think it was just like they added Talking Chop and then they added Scott, and I saw it and I was like, well, I'm not jumping in here. This is all Scott. Scott wanted Ozzy to be traded. Write that down.
Now he's going to get some tweets and won't know what the heck we said on this podcast.
That's why he has to listen to the podcast. So there you go. All right, Eric. Well, thank you. Everybody else, please subscribe. Please leave 5-star feedback if you enjoy the podcast. And we'll see everybody 1 week from now.